15 minutes before the meeting, I'll have to sign off.
Okay, we may be done early. It just depends on how much conversation and how deep we get into the conversation we do on these sections.
Let's make that a goal, Julie. 1:45.
All right.
Perfect.
We'll try and do a hard shutdown unless we're right in the middle of something.
You know how I like to talk fast, so if I get going too fast, you just slow me down.
Slow down.
I'm going to go ahead and start sharing my screen just so we've got the agenda up.
All right. So it looks like anybody that we're missing, Julie, besides the mayor? I don't know if he's I have not heard.
I have not heard from the mayor.
There he is. Hello, mayor.
Hey, Kelly. Let me see. Hey, Ryan. Yeah, I don't have a mute.
No, we're good. We can hear you.
Okay. Julie, anybody else that you know of that we're waiting for?
I'm looking through right now to see who all's here, still trying to take attendance and get my notes set. It looks like everybody that I know is attending is going to be here. I don't know if you were on when I said Davian will be a little bit late. He'll be joining us about 12:30 or a little bit after.
How about our consultants?
They're on.
Oh, hi.
And Julie, I would need to drop off for another commitment at 1:00.
Okay.
Sounds good. Well, let's just get started then.
All right.
Let me do quick introductions. Thanks to everybody for showing up again. We do have a big agenda, and we continue to have big agendas for at least the next couple months. And I think one of the items we need to kind of re-come back to, Julie, is are we going to have another meeting between now and February 18th? I think you've suggested we might need it. So I'll give you a heads up at 1:30-ish to make sure we don't miss that conversation.
Okay, thank you.
Just an intro. It's become pretty apparent to me that we've got a big effort here. And the message that I want to continually remind ourselves that we're trying to accomplish on this new land development ordinance is a few things. One is that we are trying to make sure that we meet the statutory requirements, as we know will go into effect on July 1st of 2021. Secondly, this effort started before we knew we had a deadline of July 1st, about a year ago, when the goal of the town board was primarily to modernize our UDO and make sure that we kind of move our existing UDO to more of a modern urban UDO that is applicable in today's world in Roseville. And the third aspect is to make sure that we make this UDO Roseville oriented and it's simplified. And we need to continue to keep focus on that. And really the key provisions on those that as we think about this is that there will be items that when I talk about the modern world, we still won't be completely modern. I know of a few items that we're just not going to be able to get done between now and July 1st that I would call have been kind of trendy items within urbanized planning development over the last 10 years that I don't think we're going to get a touch on. For instance, I'll pick on a couple of easy ones. Beekeeping. Beekeeping has become a big issue within many communities. And many communities have spent a lot of time on what to do with beekeeping. We don't have time to talk about that. Chickens. Chickens are another ones that come up and that have been regularly been addressed. So with that being said, those are just some small examples, but there will be others. We'll track those. But as we get into this, there's going to be items that we're just not going to touch on that have been kind of trendy in the last 10 years that we just need to set aside. And when we get this adopted, we'll come back to the town board and say, okay, how do we want to handle these? Do we want to be more reactive or proactive on these? They're not essential. They're not going to be things that are going to end the world for Roseville. They're items that are kind of good planning practices that we need to talk about, as we know that we are moving from more of a rural community to more of an urbanized community. With that being said, I just want to kind of keep those, that's what I'm keeping out in front of me as we go through this. I encourage you to keep us all of those aspects in front of us as we go through this, is what we're trying to accomplish. So is there any questions on that at all?
Kelly, just one. At one of our previous meetings, it was suggested by Danny, UDO being Unified Development Ordinance, that we change it to LDO, Land Development Ordinance.
Right.
Is that something that we are going to do in the future, or is that something up?
Yeah. So that change has been made. We have flipped the script, and everything we are doing now, we are talking about in the future. What we're adopting and what we're working on is the Land Development Ordinance, LDO.
Okay, thank you.
So, and I appreciate that, Jackie, as a reminder that when we refer to UDO, that's what we have now. What we're transitioning into is the LDO. Okay, so Julie, go forth and I'll pipe in when needed. Everybody else pipe in when needed. And I'll kind of track time, Julie.
Okay, thank you. So the first thing after the call to order is review of the minutes. We had a couple pages of minutes. So if there are no changes, we can move on. If you need to take a moment to review them from your packet, now's the time to do that. If you have any changes, now is the time to also let us know so we can reflect accordingly and then get them up on the website.
Julie, also just a reminder, I went back to the website and looked around a bit for this week. And just to remind myself what's on there, we are also placing the audio of these meetings on the website in case really anybody has a dire interest to go back and re-listen or listen to it, right?
I believe so.
Yes.
I believe they are in MP3 format.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So not only the minutes, but also if somebody really wanted to, they could hear a complete version of this. And that reminds everybody that we are recording these and that they will be posted on the website. So thank you.
Do I hear any changes?
Mm-hmm. Go for it.
All right. So we're going to say that those are good to go. And we were going to move on to the memo. So we're going to review two sections today, Section 2 and Section 5. In your memo, I also had a PowerPoint that we'll be going through slide by slide to help us with the discussions. As always, we're asking to review the memo, review the sections that are listed in the memo before you come to the meeting for key points. Is it easy to understand? Is it easy to follow? Do the charts and graphics match the descriptions? Are they easily understood with what they are meant to represent? Is there a topic you expected to see in the section that is missing? Is there a topic that is in the section that should be moved to another section? And in this slide deck, we called some things out and we also called things to specifically look at, and we also called some things out to give you notification that we're going to be talking it more in depth after July 1. And I'm sorry, I'm not looking at the camera right now. I am looking at my other screen so I can see what I'm doing. So you're going to get most of the side of my face, and I apologize for that. So the first slide is just the welcome to the LDO Steering Committee. We're talking about Sections 2 and Sections 5. Section 2 is going to go over the administration, how we plan to organize our LDO and who's going to be working on the LDO, who can approve, who can recommend for approval, who is going to be reviewing plans and sections. And then section five is an introduction to our uses, permitted uses, accessory uses, miscellaneous uses, and the permitted uses table. Section two covers the Board of Commissioners, the Planning Board, the Board of Adjustment, the Town Manager, the Technical Review Committee is going to be mostly covered in the policy manual that will be accompanying the LDO at a later date and time. We have not started the policy manual yet, but the Technical Review Committee, those bylaws and the makeup of the Technical Review Committee will be added to the policy manual, but we are going to call out that we do have a technical review committee and they will be reviewing plans for a recommendation to the boards for approvals based on what the LDO says. And then we also have a description for the land development administrator. So section 2.1 is pulled mostly from the current UDO, so we're keeping a lot of the same language. And state statutes, the new chapter 160D that replaced 160A is where we're pulling a lot of this language from. And 160D outlines what we have to have in the document, such as the updated conflict of interest that the boards need to be sworn in with an oath ceremony at the beginning of their term. And what some of those call outs are in 160D on the board makeups, how they're made up, who can serve, where they're pulled from, whether it's the ETJ or the town limits, who approves them, whether it's the Wake County Board of Commissioners for the ETJ, or if it's the Board of Commissioners for those who serve in the town limits. The same thing for the Board of Adjustment members and how we notify some of those meetings. So section 2.2 covers the review process and the procedures. Again, we'll have a separate policy manual. It will be a separate document, but it will accompany the LDO. The LDO is where we do more of the ordinance and the legal type language. The policy manual will be a little bit more of an internal document outlining the steps. And it will have some of the charts and some of the easier flow processes, you know, a flow chart to step you through the process of what happens and when you get your approval. So when you turn in an application, it's going to go to TRC first. And then after TRC makes a recommendation, then goes to the planning board. After the planning board makes a recommendation, it goes to the Board of Commissioners for their final decision. So we'll have those flow charts and who is the deciding authority for what type of process or application you're admitting. The procedures manual also house those applications and the checklist that go with them on what needs to be turned in. Section 2.2 also covers the notice requirements meeting. Julie. Oh, sorry.
So let's take breath for a second. I want to spend a moment on this.
Okay.
Because this is kind of a new concept that's being introduced today. So I want to make sure everybody's clear and I'm clear. So the procedures manual, we're going to start developing that. And that's the how-to.
Yes.
And I think that's an important piece for the board because the board, we've always talked about how do we decipher what's in the LDO to a manual that somebody can pick up and say, I want to do X and find that out. Also give staff the guide to how to do it. The question is, it'll mirror the LDO.
Yes.
And we're not making significant modifications in the LDO based upon what you just talked about. Does a procedures manual technically have to be approved also by the board?
A policy manual, because it is a policy manual, does need to be approved by the board, but it does not require a public hearing to make changes to it.
Are we calling it a policy manual or a procedures manual?
We haven't decided yet. We have a meeting on the 28th to talk about that and talk about how we're going to format the manual and what exactly how it's going to look like and what the flow is going to be.
Will that also outline or eventually outline the timeline you said of the flow of review?
Yes. Yes, it'll tell who does what, when they do it, and who makes the final decisions and what process it is, whether it's legislative, whether it's administrative, or whether it's an evidentiary hearing.
Right. and it won't contain any provisions that are not already covered in the LDO.
Correct. All the provisions will be in the LDO.
Okay.
Yep. The policy manual is just sort of a step through process on making it clear who does what and when. Any other questions? All right. Again, if I'm going too fast, just chime in and stop me. So the next thing after the procedures manual or the policy manual, we have the notice requirements for those three different things, whether it's a legislative, administrative, or an evidentiary hearing. Each of those require different types of notices, whether it's mailed to property owners, whether it's posted on site, or if it's posted in the newspaper, or a combination of all the above. Then it also goes into the hearings and explains what the difference is between a legislative hearing and what a evidentiary hearing is and the rules for that. So a legislative hearing would be for your map amendments, for those of you who serve on the board, either the planning board or the board of commissioners. You're familiar with this process. The legislative, you are allowed to have opinion. You're allowed to give testimony from just about anybody. It does not have to be expert testimony, and the swearing in does not have to happen with the legislative hearing. For the evidentiary hearing, it is considered a court case. It does need to have sworn expert testimony. So unless you are expert in your field, anything else is considered hearsay or opinion. Opinions are not allowed. So this just kind of steps through what is expected of an evidentiary hearing and what the 160D, how it just kind of classifies what we're doing. It also goes into conditions of approval. There are some cases that you're allowed to have conditions of approval upon. So this lists what those are and how we come about with those conditions. And then it also talks about the timings of hearings and the applications. And this is more of the timeline of when things have to be done. And so the policy manual will also mimic this section, and this section in the policy manual will have the flow charts and the easy to read graphics. But the timing of the hearings and the applications also needs to be in the LDO, and the policy manual will mimic what we have listed here. So again, section 2.2 is based heavily on 160D and the current UDO. Section 2.3 is also kind of based on that. Let me turn my page. So 2.3 is also pulled from the current UDO and the state statutes. We had a numbering change. So what you have in your packet is 2.3 vested rights. On this, it was 2.4 on a previous version. So we're just going to, what the vested rights section does is it talks about the permit choice. Permit choice is needed to be talked about when you're going from the UDO to the LDO, because as development does not stop, as we are transitioning from one to the other, permit choice is listed so that people know what rules and regulations they're submitting the application under. Anything that is submitted at this current time is under the current UDO. Anything that is being submitted while we're having the public hearings, after we've already noticed for the LDO, and while the LDO is going through that process of getting approved during the public hearings, the applicant does have permit choice to decide whether they want to go under the old regulations, which is now the current UDO, or if they want to follow the new regulations that will be in effect under the new LDO. And so we do have a section to help that transition between the timing of developments as we move forward with the UDO and the LDO.
Did you say that window is when again?
What's the window? Window is after we start having the public hearings and getting things approved. Up until that time, the LDO is still considered just in draft format. So once we start having public hearings and once we start going to the Board of Commissioners, say they don't approve it the first night they have a public hearing and they have to extend it, this covers those projects that might fall in that timeline.
So it's a relatively short time window.
It is a short time. And it also tells us how those vested rights are for things that are being submitted right now, and helps with transition of how long we keep the current UDO kind of active for those permits that are already being submitted at this time until they are carried over into the new LDO. So the next section, the next sections really are, they're all pulled from the same sources. The current UDO, which just is heavily based on 160D. The numbering sections got a little bit pulled different from 160D where they were in 160A. So anything that reflects the 160D stuff, we've updated any language, and we've also updated any references that might have changed. So that's the biggest part that you'll see in the differences between what we currently have on the books and what we're going to for the vested rights. And so that is section two. Again, it was mostly administrative, how we're handling things, and we're not proposing large shakeups to any of the boards. So we're not proposing, you know, that certain boards either go away or that they redefine themselves. We're keeping everything mostly as is. We're just updating the language to make sure that everything complies with 160D as directed by the state, to make sure that we're covering all the angles for either notifications, for swearing in ceremonies, and for the new conflict resolutions. Any questions?
So, Julie, is it fair to say that unless the board has some desire to change assignments that are they're allowed in the approval process, what we're doing is following current code and the mandates from the state?
Yes.
But there is some room, if the board is so inclined, to make some modifications if they're so, and that would be a board discussion in the future.
Yes. Okay. Yes. At that this time, we're just carrying everything over as is. We are not introducing any new shakeups, but the board has that ability. Yes. All right, well, I kind of flew through that section. So if you have any others, just let me know. If you have any questions or comments later, if you think of something, always feel free to come back and email me or call me, and we can talk about it. So yeah, moving
one of the things, Julie, that I think some of the board members in interested in, and I don't know if it'd be in this section that you just went over or not, but dealing with a sunset clause on approved projects. So is that addressed somewhere in the section four, or is that addressed somewhere else?
It is addressed in your section for vested rights. And for that, let's see what we've got. I believe permits, your actual building permits are set for 6 months, and any other local development approvals are set for 1 year. Any site specific, if you have a site specific vested plan, if you can prove that you do have the vested rights, meaning that you've done some sort of work on the site, or you've got something going on with the site, there's been activity on the site, that is up to 5 years with 160D, but you have to have something done on the site or else everything sunsets at 1 year.
So does something mean, like, how small is something? I know you gave one example, but that could be just testing dirt again or boring for more rock.
No, it would be actual like progress on the site. So if you're retesting, if you're doing something over and over again, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're making progress. What it is you have to make progress on the site.
So, Julie, a question. If we were extending the road, let's say that the site plan has been approved,
mm-hmm.
but we have not cut the road in yet. So cut the road in, put the curb and gutter and everything and pave the road. Would that consider be an improvement?
Yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So Michelle, your question was, what is considered progress? It's anything that moves you forward on the site plan development. So if you're making strides on actually doing what the approved plan says that you're doing, so that you can see forward movement on the site. So that means you're securing you've got your grading permit, you're out there actively grading, you're putting in the infrastructure, if you're calling in your inspections. If the site lays dormant, there's no activity, there's no people on the site, there's no movement, there's no forward progress, which would be going to the next step of development, and then it just sits there, it would have that sunset clause of when that time is up, they would have to go in and get reapproval for the site. So if they just get a site plan approval and they do nothing, they don't turn in permits, they don't get the approvals, they don't start grading, they have a year to do something on site. If they don't do anything on that site within a year, then the sunset clause kicks in and they will have to come back for a reapproval.
Okay, so I'm going to ask this one quick question. So they can keep coming back for approval then, correct?
They can.
How do you think about that? Because I know, as an example, when the villages was moving forward, I mean, that sat for a long time until another developer came in. But it was years before they completed that neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Between the last house where they stopped, I mean, that situation may be a little different because I know there were some financial issues going on, but again, it stopped and then it picked up and then certain requirements were never fulfilled anyway.
Mm-hmm. And as part of these permits, whether it's a special use permit or a rezoning that has conditions tied to it, as the board making their final decisions, the board can adjust the vested rights. So they can say, if you want to give the it's a larger project and you know that they're not going to, be able to mobilize within the year, that you can give them extra time. This does not take away from that power from the board. This is the blanket for all development approvals. If you do not do anything on the site within a year, then you will lose your approval and have to come back through the process again.
There is a section about, there is multi-phase development sections.
Yes, there is.
That's 7 years.
Yes.
Which could be a better example of the villages, potentially.
Yes.
I have a question. I don't know if it pertains to the section, but it is a use and permit question.
Okay.
I just don't know if it's a section. One of the issues that I have when trying to either lease a building or ask for, can this business go here? A lot of times if there wasn't a business there the same, it's a special use permit. Is there a way to, are we going to add like a chart of things that are already approved? If it's a commercial zone, okay, these businesses are approved, these are not, so that not everything is a special use permit.
Yes. That chart is what we're going to go over here in just a second. It okay. is in the back of section 5. And that is one of the things that we do need to talk about, are what is permitted and what is considered special use. And if you see anything that you would like to discuss on those uses where you think a use would be better suited, and it may be either a blank on the chart or noted as a special use and you think it should be just a general by right, we can go over that.
Okay. Julie, just to wrap up the vested rights and the duration conversation. You've talked about everything that might come in the door after the LDO, but how about those that are currently approved, the half dozen or so that we know are kind of been approved, lack of activity, are they grandfathered in or does the clock start on them with this?
They are grandfathered in it's not considered grandfathered in, but they are under the current UDO. So our current UDO standards is what applies to them. The new updated vested rights section will only apply to things or developments that come in after the LDO is approved or anybody who chooses that permit choice
while
the LDO is being approved.
Okay.
Let me give one quick clarification from what Julie just said. And we need to check with Dave Neal, town attorney. Dealing with 160D, the UDO adoption and approvals are going to eventually have a sunset. Even if the ordinance didn't specify that, because it cannot run indefinitely after July 1st of 2021. So under 160D, based off the type of approval, it could expire if they do not make adequate progress and require resubmittal of any phase or portion that they haven't finished to be reapproved. I'm not going to get into too much in the details of that, but I do want to make a point that 160D, the new section, does not allow old ordinances to run indefinitely, on any site plan or development to run indefinitely in that process.
Well, that's an important question that we'll need to know the answer here in about a month or so. So,
all right, I've started that question for Dave. Any other questions? All right, I'm going to flip my notes here and go back to the screen. All right, so section 5. And let me get to section 5. Section 5 is the use section. Just as a caveat for this, we might be moving some of these sections around. So what you currently see at the back of section 5, which is 5.5, the permitted principal use table, that will probably be moving forward, so that the chart is the first thing you see when you open up the section rather than at the end. So some of the final, we're still working on how best to structure it. But I believe we're looking at putting the table first, because that's what the easy to digest information is. And that's usually what people are looking for, is can I do this in this building, or can I do this on this property? What is it zoned and what can I do? So since that's the first thing people look for, we're planning on putting that first. And Davian, I want to welcome you, and I have you down as attending.
Thank you, Julie. So
thank you for joining us when you could. The principal uses section basically describes what's going on, and what we've done differently is instead of lumping all the principal uses just in alphabetical order, what we've done is we've grouped them by a type of principal use. So the first we have is the residential uses, and then from there they do go in alphabetical order, but it kind of details a little bit more about what we're talking about when we talk about a dwelling, if it's single family attached, if it's single family double, if it's single family detached, how we're planning on putting those in, the live work units, different group care homes, family care homes. And so we've got these grouped by principal uses now, and the table also does that as well. So it's a little bit different format from what we have currently in the UDO. As I said, the current UDO just has everything listed in the table and in the charts just alphabetically. So we did try to group them to make them a little bit easier to follow and understand, a little bit more user-friendly for those charts. As we talked about in the beginning of the meeting, some of these things are going to be really large discussions that we have to have with the town boards, with the town itself, on how we want to handle some of these principal uses or some of these accessory uses. So some of the things that we're looking at to talk about after July 1 to come back and kind of have that larger discussion after we hit our deadline of compliance with 160D, because we do have to have an ordinance that is compliant with 160D in effect by July 1, 2021. So we only have a couple months to get most of this, the format pulled over, most of the language pulled over, and then we can go back as the LDO is a living document. We go back through and we tackle some of these larger issues that will take a little bit more time. That way we have something that's compliant, and then we can go back and amend as needed based on those conversations. So some of the things that we're looking at for the residential principal uses later are the tiny houses, which is a small house and a small lot. If it meets minimum housing code, is it has to have a separate bathroom, a kitchen area, and a bedroom area, and it has to be 120 square feet or larger. And so the tiny houses as a principal use on a smaller lot, if it's a smaller house, how we're going to handle those. Same thing with the cottage and the bungalows. There's different terminologies for what a cottage or a bungalow court is, and different pictures that go with it, different types of displays that might need more massaging from the boards and from the town input on what we'd like to see in what areas. So usually the cottage or the bungalow courts are more reserved for senior facilities, like a block group with the cottages facing inward instead of facing onto the street, so that you're coming out to a community garden or some type of garden space or some type of green open space, and your houses face inward instead of outward onto the street. So if we're interested in something like that in the middle of another development, or if we just want that on any type of development, those types of things that are becoming more common in other places, especially towns that are growing like us in our size and the way we're growing, some of these conversations do need to happen. And so we've got those two pulled out as things that we do need to talk about in the future. But I didn't know if there is anything else that you had wanted to talk about, or that there is another type of housing besides the duplex, the townhome, the multifamily complexes, which is your apartments, your condominiums, or your single family detached. If there is another housing type that we need to start preparing for to have those conversations after July 1.
Julie, I'm going to throw one. Go ahead. Let me throw one in real fast, Michelle. And that is, I think the conservation development, an ag oriented residential, those are becoming really popular, where you build an ag based kind of residential neighborhood would be a perfect fit in our watershed. And so I would like to make sure we don't lose track of that one. See if that's a smart idea or not.
All right. Michelle?
I've had a couple of people ask me in regards to mobile homes. I'm not saying I'm for it. I'm just saying that that's something that I've been hearing people inquire about with little pieces of land. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think we allow it in the ETJ, Michelle. We just don't allow it in the city limits.
Okay.
The answer to the question of that one, Michelle, is that there's two districts. There's the rural mobile home manufactured home district, and then there's the urban manufactured home district, and it has to be zoned those districts to get qualified, one of those, to allow a manufactured home, either on an individual lot or on a mobile home park. Mobile home parks would be in the urban. We only have one mobile home park in Roseville, and there's been not any proposed new ones. We have in the past in the rural areas of the ETJ got requests for the rural mobile home, manufactured home, zoning district, particularly out here towards Burlington Mills Road. So it has to be in the one of those two zoning districts to allow it.
Okay.
I have a question.
Yeah, Kelly.
If you guys are going to, maybe put cottages and bungalow courts in there, I'm not sure how it is now in the UDO, but is the, you have to have, right-of-way frontage in order to do that? Or can you have a private street to do that? Especially if they're bungalows with garages in the back. Sometimes those alleys can feed the garages, and but the each unit might not be on a public road. It would be in a like an HOA kind of property.
Yeah. Right?
Just something to think about. I don't know if there's a rule behind that. I know in Raleigh, if you did townhomes, you could do condos on one and not subdivide them. Well, you subdivide them, but they're not on lots that have public right of way. Just something for the, I would think that kind of situation, you would probably want to have a private street, or I guess you could make the alley a public street, but.
Yeah, our current UDO doesn't really allow for this type of configuration, and that's why we wanted to talk about it as part of what we might be able to do in the future.
Yeah, I was going to say, when you think about it, just think about that, because a lot of times it's just an alley. You know, it's got to be 20 fire protection, but it's but making it a 55-foot right of way or whatever it's going to be is.
To answer your question, the current UDO all. Individual lots and properties must front, have some frontage on a public street. Now, you're correct, in a townhome development, it does allow private streets. It is a choice between public and private. If it's a private street, it has to be maintained by a homeowners association. Alleys are not considered frontage. They are more intended for rear access or alternate access to the structures, but still have to have some frontage. If you go and modify that, then you're going to have to deal with the distinction between public and private streets, when it's where it's allowed and what under what type of development is allowed. Currently, townhomes is the only allowance for a dedicated private street to be privately maintained.
I just think with that, with those bungalows, and like you said, having that green space in between whatever it's for, I can see that being that whole bungalow or even townhomes for that matter, having access to a public street, but not necessarily for garage access.
Right.
Yeah, the garage access could be modified to where it's an alley in the back, and that could be, that would be private.
Yeah.
Because alleys are private. Currently, and probably in, you can do this cottage bungalow courts with a public street wrapping around the open space around it in the front, if that's what you're, that's what you're looking for. Yeah. I think there's different ways of doing some of this stuff, and it has to be examined a little bit more in depth.
Good. A smaller section too, if it's a public street for whatever to be that alley. But I just wanted to throw that in there because that's always a challenge.
Yes, thank you. And I've made notes on it so that we will keep it in when we are ready to discuss it. So did we miss anything on what you would like to see?
I got a question for Kelly. You mentioned the conservation neighborhoods and stuff. I was thinking we already had those. So are we losing those July 1 and we won't be able to do those anymore or not?
Probably a better question for my planning staff. Is that true or not?
So we do have the conservation subdivision, and we are talking about carrying it over. Danny can talk a little bit more about it, but I think what Kelly was talking about was a more ag-oriented residential, where there is, you know, some type of agricultural, agritourism, things like that on the site itself. Our current conservation subdivisions are subdivisions that with more required open space that you can have reduced lot size and do a little bit different. So there are two different things that we're discussing. Right.
So, yeah, thank you for the clarification, Mayor. And thank you for the clarification, Julie. What I was talking about, Mayor, I used the wrong term. So thank you. Was more a community-based, which is, it's become kind of a popular trend to build these community-based subdivisions that are self-sufficient in many ways. And they have their own gardens and such that allow the neighborhood to use the land, for lack of a better word, for their purposes, for agriculture. So it's a growing hit and miss, but I think it's going to be one that's going to be very interesting over time as people continue to trend into how do I raise my own crops? It has kind of a shared crop mentality and such like that. So I think Julie described it right. I used the wrong term.
Yeah, let me also answer for you. The neighborhood conservation district, as defined in current UDO, has some legal problems. It allows uses that's prohibited in the underlying district. Right now, we have not addressed anything in that fashion for the transition beyond the town center, other than the corridor mixed-use development option or the suburban mixed-use development district. And that's going to be a floating district that would be petitioned. But we can get to more on that later. But the neighborhood conservation district was kind of contradictory, I guess if I say it by its title. It didn't really encourage conservation of single family. It was more allowance to do commercial. So if you think you still want to keep something like that, we're going to have to create a unique district for it.
I think mine was similar. I was just wondering if we are accounting for like the buildings with retail on the bottom and residential above that are real starting to become real popular. And I know Roseville doesn't have it, but I think like Lafayette Village is probably calling for it, where there's retail and then condos or townhomes above them on the second and third floor.
Yes. So we have some mixed use districts that we're introducing. We have the town center. We have the corridor mixed use and the suburban mixed use that Denny was just talking about, where we have that we allow for live work units where you work downstairs and live upstairs. You're more artisan type workspace where you might have the loft above your workspace. So we have put that in as a residential use. And then with the mixed uses, we do have that as a floating district. So it would be something that you petition into for whatever that development is. And it would allow a mix of the residential and what we did for the town center that the Board of Commissioners just approved on the 5th of January was that it's commercial on the ground floor and your residential units are allowed on the upper floors.
Would y'all approve that way, that one right there across from Hardee's, that's going to be retail at the bottom, but then office at the top two floors?
I believe that's a medical building. Danny, correct me if I'm wrong, because that was a little bit before my time, but I think he's talking about Redford Place.
Yeah, that's it.
That is retail on the ground floor with medical or offices on the upper floors.
Okay.
There is no residential in that building. And it's what referred to as Redford Place.
All right. So if we haven't missed any other residential uses, or as you're going through, if you're driving through another community and you see something that you would like, or you see something that you're like, hey, why doesn't Rollsville does that? Always give me a call or an email to just make sure that we're thinking about things and are able to expand upon these uses. So, again, if you ever have any questions or you think of something later, always feel free to contact me.
Yeah,
so,
I just want to make sure we have one that can be used efficiently in the watershed, the piece of the watershed that we have in the ETJ that, even R1 doesn't work in the watershed. R1 doesn't even work there. So I thought we had a good one that was used here on Averett Road, but I'm not confident that's going to move over, and I'm not confident we're going to have something similar that folks can use going forth.
All right. We'll make sure we look into that, Ronnie, and then we'll bring something back to make sure that we've captured your vision and the direction that you're giving us.
Mayor, let's talk about the watershed. The watershed districts we have now is the residential 40W district for residential. And then we got commercial district watershed, industrial district watershed. We got mobile home watershed district, something like that. We're pulling all of the watershed's area away from being individual zoning districts with use types limitations to become eventually what is referred to as an overlay district that will provide or require additional requirements on anything that's on the base zoning, which is what we're just talking about, is your base zoning districts of residential, commercial, industrial. So in the watershed, I envision we're going to have identified as low density residential district with a Little River watershed overlay over it. And as such is going to increase those lot sizes to from the minimum in the low density to what's required to meet state rules for watershed protection, which is 40,000 square feet. There will also be the ability to do a conservation subdivision, and you can do a 25% reduction, just like Chandler's Ridge just did, and the back portion there. That will still exist, but it'll be in the different titles of provisions in there. But it's anything other than that, it's going to stay, have to be limited to meet the state rules on watershed protection for a Little River.
And that's kind of what I'm talking about. So that's fine, Danny, as long as that. I know years ago we used to call them cluster.
Right. And used to call them clusters, but the terminology, we may go change the name of that to make it easier to understand than call it conservation. But the reason behind doing the watershed as an overlay is that it will apply, and you can petition rezoning from residential to commercial. The only issue is the overlay is going to put impervious coverage limitations on you, and that's going to limit your ability and how much you can build on the site, regardless of what the base zoning is. And it won't go through the issue we have now is in our table is so big, and they don't list all the districts. That's what floors means. All the districts are not listed in there because it would be an astronomical table that would, you almost have to have a ledger, big ledger to even in fine print to even read it. So we're trying to simplify some of the districts here is what I'm trying to get to.
Mm-hmm. All right, I'm going to advance the slide to the civic uses and the commercial uses. Again, what we've got is carried over from our current UDO and some of the items to consider after July 1 or any other that you would like to add to this. So the private amenity centers, I think we're just going to strike this. It's not a community center. It's more of a privately based issuance. And I don't think that the classification needs to be called out. We have event centers and we have amenity centers and we have other places that this kind of lumps into. So I think we're going to kind of reclass that and put it underneath some of the other names and titles that we already have and just remove that use from the civic uses. If you have any other civic uses that weren't listed, let me know. I didn't have any tag to talk about. Civic uses are almost basic, so there's not a lot of controversy there. Moving on to the commercial uses, some of the things that we have a place for, but not so much of design standards or anything for them as the pop-up markets, the open air markets, your self-storage. Tattoo parlors we've added under the adult businesses. So we have reclassed that to under the adult businesses. So that should take care of that one. But so I didn't know.
And after July 1, I mean, or we'll have that in the, in other words, you know, seasonal strawberry stands. Are we're going to still outlaw those, or we're going to allow those to be done somehow, some way in the future?
That is what we're here to discuss. So the pop-ups, some of the smaller ag things, if the ag businesses are on their own farm, they're exempt from our zoning ordinances. If they are a strawberry from a farmer who's grown and harvested the strawberries themselves, and they want to have an off-site center, that would be considered something that we would be able to have a zoning permit for. So that is one of the things that we do need to discuss, is if you want them to be on the farms themselves or if you want to have them somewhere in town, and then where we're classifying them, and if you want to do them by right or if you want to have them timed, or if you want them to go through some sort of special permitting process.
Yeah, I see the problem I have with that. I don't see any difference in selling strawberries and selling Christmas trees seasonal.
Yeah.
And you know, and really the process to be able to do that shouldn't take 3 or 4 months of getting a permit used to,
right.
to do
right.
strawberries.
Those all should be administrative within the guidelines approved.
Okay. That's right. Include farmers markets?
Yeah, I don't know if the farmers markets are allowed, really, you know, Michelle, I know nobody's brought it to attention, but.
But I think it's going to be an issue moving forward, Ronnie.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, somebody, yeah. you know, if a business owner complains enough about it, you know, you're right.
Let me clarify a few things here. Current UDO does have what they call temporary uses, and your produce stands that is not on the farm site, setting up somewhere in the town. Right now, currently requires a special use permit. And as the mayor and town manager has already pointed out, that maybe that should be changed, but that would be under accessories for commercial. And the farmer's market is in that same category. It has a special use permit for the site here at Town Hall. So we need to address that question with people wanting to set up farmers market privately, as well as sponsored through the town, like similar to what is here now.
So when you say sponsored through the town, when I was referencing farmers market, I wasn't referencing a partnership or anything like that with the town. I'm just saying somebody who privately, or anybody who privately has a farmers market or plans on starting a farmers market moving forward.
And because it's temporary use versus a permit use makes a difference in the category. So that's something that has to be looked at.
Okay.
Right, because we're still talking about.
But there would need to be a provision for it somewhere in the use table to allow it, and say how it can be allowed, and what the process of approval would be. Mm-hmm. And then you would decide whether you want it to be well scrutinized through a special use permit.
So we can look at parking.
Some detrimental issues that has to be addressed as you put one in, or you can do administratively with a criteria to say you meet this, this, and this, and we issue and approve.
Okay, thank you.
Because I think when you mentioned temporary, also is I know like the current one that runs, it runs just temporarily one day a week, but it also goes 13 weeks. So, mm-hmm. at what point is temporary versus permanent, type when you having multiple weeks of the same event?
It's a good question. And that and is something that we need to make sure we define.
I was going to say, that's in your definition section of what's terminated, what you base those temporary versus permanent facilities, which we haven't got to yet.
Yeah.
It's coming.
And also, I guess I assume we will get to this. As Julie has referenced, tattoo parlors would go under adult use. And I called Julie a couple of days ago when I was reading through all of this. I just want us to make sure that when it comes to adult use, we have control over that, because I do not want to see any topless bars or anything like that in Roseville. That's a personal preference, and that category scares me.
Mm-hmm.
I share the same sentiment about electronic gaming operations, Mr. Wilson.
Okay.
Okay, yes. So when you mentioned stuff like this, I know 4 or 5 years ago, there was an issue with the vaping store coming in. There was definitely an issue with the tattoo store. There was another one that I can't remember that was probably controversial as well.
Oh, bingo, yeah, the bingo parlor.
So, I mean, is there something, because I didn't see anything and I could have missed it. Does what we're talking about now relate to any of those types of businesses? Even a CBD store. For some other businesses, that's an issue, but we do have one.
Mm-hmm. So under your, and this is what we're going over right now, is the definitions of what things are classified as. Okay. So under the adult business, we're going to include the tattoo parlors, and of course the adult establishment is anything that caters exclusively to the adult oriented businesses, such as adult books or adult films, novelty items, that type of thing. They have restrictions placed on them under the use standards. The same thing with the electronic gaming operations. We define what they are. We define where they can be under the standards. Go ahead.
We're expecting, but don't mind, give me a minute to get settled.
Okay. So
can we also say that,
I mean, with respect to the definitions, and I know I think you mentioned that they're somewhere else, but do the definitions include something regarding age requirements for any of the products or services that those particular businesses offer?
I think under general statutes for adult businesses, they're defined. I don't know if we have them defined in this other than that it needs to be in compliance with the general statutes regulating adult businesses, which is General Statute 14-202 to 210B. So we do have the actual state legislation listed as the guiding documents for those, and what we classify as an adult, who's an adult, and what those items are. So we don't have them called out specifically in our ordinance, but we do have them referenced to the actual state statutes themselves, which is more restrictive than the local ordinances. And then as we move to, and I'm gonna jump forward to section 5.5 for the table, where you see where these allowed uses, since we're going over the definitions, where you see these allowed uses, listed in the proposed zoning areas under our new, what we have proposed as our new zoning districts. For adult businesses, you see it as a special use, and it is only allowed in neighborhood commercial. And so when I say it's only allowed in neighborhood commercial, that's the only zoning you can apply for a special use permit, but it still is a special use permit. So it still has to come before the board, and the board has to agree to have that business. It is an evidentiary hearing. So it does need noticed. It does need to have that expert testimony, what we had talked about in section 2. And then it does require the board to approve that permit for use before that is an allowed use in that zoning district. So we do have that listed as a special use. It is not permitted by right. So the table in the back on section 5.5 is where some of these things are called out a little bit more on where they're allowed and what we're expecting that permit process to be. Some of the other things that we have not really talked about.
Julie, yes? can you take just a moment? I think it'd be helpful if you just use your slider bar and go all the way down to the bottom where you are, so that you
can only do tattoo parlors. Just the last.
I think it's in your presentation, right?
It's using at the very packet. Bottom.
So if you can slide it all the way down.
And one more thing just to add, I wasn't sure if there was like a legend, this Davian Cross speaking about the table. I love the table. I think it's a great idea. Is there any way to find or locate a legend or a key? Sure, I know what TC means at the very top in green there. It means town center. And I'm sure I can take a guess what the others are, but for someone like me or the average person looking, will these be defined? And I apologize if I missed that somewhere.
You have not missed it. It's defined in section 3, which we haven't gone over yet. But we can put a legend on the table, so it calls it out a little bit easier.
Right there, right.
And exactly. We can also, we have asked for a legend to be added so that you know what P and S means, because unless you're familiar with the table, you don't know that P means permitted by right, and S means that you need a special use permit. So we will be putting a legend on there, yes.
Julie, I have a question. Can we have a section that says businesses that are not allowed? And we can put that in there, such as topless bars, well, for me and this personal vaping, but again, now, bingo.
You already have a vaping store like here, this. Jackie.
I'm sorry?
There's already a vaping store here.
I know. I'm just making this an example. There are that are in Raleigh that I do not want them here in Rollsville.
I know we talked about this. Forest has one.
Listed both ways. Like,
so I think Danny's going to chime in here.
Let me chime in here, Jackie, and remind everybody. State law court cases say you cannot prohibit all uses. You cannot go have uses. You totally prohibit. You must provide a district that permits a process to obtain approval of those uses. Okay. So let's just take adult businesses. Adult businesses can be regulated and restricted with some criteria such as spacing to churches, schools, daycares, and other residential based zoning districts, residential zoned areas. So many feet away. You can also limit how frequently are you can't put one within proximity of another. And if you look, there's a section in here about adult businesses that spells that out.
Okay.
It can be restricted with a special use permit so that you can look at the criteria to see if that everything's appropriate for it or put additional conditions on it. But you cannot totally ban it. You must provide somewhere that is allowed, but you can make it very restrictive, almost impossible to get approved.
So you know, a couple of years ago, that kind of a business could not be within 200 miles of the town center.
Well, on a serious note, we had this issue at the tattoo parlor a couple of years ago, and I remember this conversation just with Danny, based on what Danny had said. That's what we were ultimately told. You can't stop it, but other things happened that prevented that particular business from coming. But you may get somebody coming forward next time who's willing to put up more of a fight.
So, all right, let's talk about tattoo parlors right quick. Tattoo parlors are not necessarily adult businesses. And they don't, I got a question with our consultant about suggesting that they be lumped with adult businesses because that's not in the definition of the reference in here, General Statutes 14-201, subsection 10, parentheses B. Those are not listed. Tattoo parlors do not fit in that category. But you can do some limitations. The issue here in Roseville is that they were never listed in the use table. And the statement, normal statement you put in an ordinance is any uses that are not permitted are prohibited and requires a consideration of an amendment to your ordinance to allow that use. In other words, you will have to go upon a petition to go designate it, what zoning district is allowed, is it permitted or is it a special use? And if you're going to have any standards or guidelines on that, which makes it a special use permit, you have to spell those out. And in a lot of communities on tattoo parlors, they'll go and put distances from schools or churches, other residential neighborhoods, stuff like that, and a name, a certain business district that it's allowed. Now that's something that has got to be, we got to discuss with the consultant, because I think tattoo parlors here probably will not meet the test for a legal challenge. But I'm not an attorney, but I think there's a challenge in this.
I might've misspoken when I said that they were lumping them in adult businesses. I think it's just going to be classed like an adult business. I don't know if they're actually lumping them into the adult.
It is currently in the what he's got drafted here, lumped together. It is.
I think.
We're going to refine that a little bit better. But the vaping is a retail use, and your CBD type business we have here, that's a retail use. State law does not treat that as a controlled substance because of the percentage of the drug they put in there is so low that it's not considered illegal.
Really quick, I think I just want to make a comment here in regards to the adult businesses. And also, I do align a little bit with Jackie on, I think it's just the using the terminology. If you look it up, just Google adult businesses or adult oriented, the first thing that comes up is sexually oriented, you know, the first page is all about that. So as far as just maybe retitling that, is that an option? I don't know how this came about using adult businesses. Is it possible to say maybe professional service use or business use? Or I don't know, I'm just thinking off the top of my head, rather than using adult businesses, because that's the first thing came to my mind when I saw it as well. So I agree with Jackie to some aspects.
Damien, it is defined by state law.
It is defined. It is a definition.
In the general statutes, you must use the terminology specified adult. By the general statutes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so adult business is defined. Thank you for clarifying that.
Yeah, that, and there's provisions and regulations on that. We don't have to go repeat. You don't even have to go put the definition in your ordinance. You just reference the general statutes and they have to comply, because no rule and regulation dealing with them can supersede what's set in the state law.
Sure. Okay.
Now, can we just have them listed? Like if you had them listed here, like adult business, and you see where it's got an S, if you don't put the S there, are they just not allowed in any other uses?
Correct. Right now, an adult business is only allowed by special use in what will be our industrial zone. So you have to make it available at some point. So right now, it's only available in industrial zoned properties, and it's by special use, which means it has to prove that it meets the criteria and all the standards for that business.
Okay, because I looked at Wake Forest's and they don't have it allowed at all on any use, any type of use.
Mm-hmm. That's illegal.
Okay.
And so we don't want to do something that's not necessarily in line with 160D. So we want they might be updating that as part of their 160D July 1 things as well. So I can't speak for them, but as for us, because we cannot outright ban it, we have to have it available somewhere, and this is the most restrictive way to do it.
Okay, gotcha. All right.
And the only, Kelly, if I remember correctly, and back when I was on the board the first time, the only industrial zoning we had in the city limits was Pine Glow. Now, Pine Glow is leaving us. Once they leave us, can we change the zoning there from industrial to office and professional or retail, commercial, something?
That's a good question.
I think that's something we need. We don't need to discuss it now, but yeah. Ronnie, we need to look at that and when the time's appropriate, move on that.
Okay, Mayor may check out, but yeah.
I do have a quick question, because if they sell that to somebody who purchases that property based on the current zoning of that property, would that be a roadblock for us?
Let's capture that question. We'll do a little response back to you.
All right, sounds good. Thank you.
Yeah, let's move on.
That's a good question.
But let me also point out, dealing with adult businesses that are industrial zoning, the ones we have, when you go look at the criteria, they're not going to be able to go in there. Okay. And the reason is they're too close to a church, a school, a daycare, or a residential zoned area.
That's right. We've got a daycare right behind them. Great. Then
the question is, does our LDO still run the test of legal?
Thank you.
It will run the test of legal. It's just that because you could always, here's the other issue. You can go always get petition go zoning. Get okay. You can rezone. Yes.
Okay. That's right. All right.
Thank you.
Well, Julie, I like all those answers. Can we make sure the town attorney agrees with all those answers?
Yes. I will send him my notes and we'll discuss. I'll follow up.
Thank you.
All right. So office and medical, industrial and infrastructure, they're your basic classifications. I don't want to use the word basic, but that's practically what they are. So you've got your dental, your animal care, your hospitals, your medical facilities, your office, your urgent care under the office and medical. Under industrial, you've got your manufacturing, you've got your flex space, you've got your light industrial, your heavy industrial, you've got your junkyards. We do have something that is new to us, which is the I don't believe we have a junkyard in our current UDO, and then we don't have landfill in our current UDO. Again, these are things that you can't outright ban. As part of 160D, we do need to make sure that our ordinance complies. Again, but these things can be restricted, and we need, if you want them more restrictive, then we need to look at those standards, your recycling and warehousing and your wholesales. So for infrastructure, it's your utilities and your wireless. And I think we're going to move wireless the section into the actual where it's got the different standards for it. We're going to move that over to the actual telecommunications section, so that we just maybe have a placeholder here of, you know, wireless is allowed, and then go see this section for the more detailed standards and criteria for what we're expecting with those. So that will be a placeholder, and then your open principal uses, which is the agriculture. So I flew kind of through those.
I want to go back to the industrial use again.
Okay, go back to industrial.
Yards and landfills. It goes back to Jackie's point. We may have been talking about adult business, but I think we do need to better understand what our ability is to address industrial areas if we're going to have these provisional uses, special use permits. Again, Pine Glow being in the middle of Main Street, as an industrial use, I mean, I'll just pick on that one. I want to make sure we know what we could get, and then talk about if the board can or wants to initiate a possible different classification if that's of interest. So,
yeah, and that's where this, what page am I on? Let me just look at it. I'm on 12. So that is where this chart really comes in handy, because it's the overall visual for it. That's just a quick summary. So you go down the industrial,
go down page 53 is the scary ones. Page 53 on your chart, four more down. You've got landfills, that's where your landfills, there you go. Landfill.
Okay, that page 53. I was like, my slides on the agenda, okay.
That's your potential scary page to me.
Yes.
With industrial right on Main Street. So we should understand that and talk about what that means if we pursue this and if we want that.
And then point out that right now we only have one industrial district in the current UDO. This change will allow two. One is your general industrial, which is one Kelly just referenced. It's got all the uses being permitted under I. But then you've got your industrial business park, which is a little bit more restrictive. It doesn't permit some of the more intensive uses.
This one right here.
But you're going to keep simplifying the map. You're not going to do an IBP, I'm assuming. Today, we're going to transfer industrial to industrial, right?
Well, that's a question of debate if you're dealing with Pine Glow, if you want to keep it in that category.
All right, that may be one way we could address it between now and July 1st, but that's it's a pretty big step between now and July 1st. So,
but you do have an industrial building.
Yeah,
you want to at least find some adaptive reuse of it, unless you're intending to completely bulldoze it down and rebuild it.
Yeah.
To something else.
That's right. I understand. Okay.
Why would industrial be on Main Street? Like
it was there a long time ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Grandfathered in.
Long time history of Pine Glow.
So even if
Pine Glow goes back to the 70s. I think it was in the early 70s, 80s it went in.
The governor came down and did the whole thing and got a haircut, if I remember. Is that right? There's that whole story. Right.
Yep.
Yeah. It was a big day of our life with the governor of that time in Bangalore.
So basically, it's grandfathered in, even no matter what you zone it.
Right. It is not grandfathered in. It is a permitted use in industrial zone classification. It can expand and enlarge off that site as long as they meet the criteria and standards.
But as we know, they are leaving.
They are legal.
Yeah. But Jackie's point is we should have a very distinct conversation about that if we think that it will go on to market and be a potential reuse.
Yes.
I mean, if it's zoned industrial, they're gonna commercial realtors, we would sell it as a commercial industrial.
Exactly, that's what I'm thinking, Brad. So that might be a problem.
If it's there, we're gonna sell it as that. But like, you wouldn't rezone it. I mean, if you rezone it to something else, the person that's currently there could still stay under the grandfather. But then the next person coming in would have to change the zone. Would either have to tear it down or do something in a new.
Right. I think what we're talking about, Brad, is just making sure we know our choices as a town, if we're interested in being proactive in advance of a potential market, if there's interest. I mean, I don't know.
And I also believe that if we approach the owner after he vacates and tell him that that land will be of more value, zone commercial or office and professional or retail, then he would agree for the rezoning.
Yeah.
And that would take care of the problem.
And even so, you put it on the historic overlay. Does the historic overlay go over that far? You don't go all the way down
there? No. No. It's just Young and Main.
Okay.
Right. Any other comments on office, medical, industrial, infrastructure, or open uses? And so at the beginning of our meeting, we already talked about like the community gardens, bees, chickens, urban farming, and how those are probably going to be larger conversations and they'll be added after July 1st. But in order to get to a compliant code by July 1st, we are going to be basing it mostly on what we have now and then come back to those discussions later. Is there anything else that needed to be added? I see no's. Okay, so we'll move on to accessory uses now. What we had just talked about was the principal uses. Accessory uses are uses that can happen on the property that is an accessory to the principal use. So you've got your main use, and then you've got something else that might be incidental. This covers home occupations. It covers, you know, your sheds, your pools, your detached garages, that kind of thing for residential. So we called out the home occupations. That is a carryover of our current code right now. Most of the accessory structures that we have is carried over from what we have right now. It's not too controversial. Same thing for the miscellaneous uses. We've called out some things that don't really fit as an accessory use, don't really fit as a principal use. So some things as like the mail kiosks, your bicycle racks, your any donation boxes, your vehicle charging stations, that kind of thing.
I think the home occupations will be one that we probably want to monitor after July 1st. With the pandemic, I think there's going to be a significant shift to home occupations. And even in our proposed LDO, what was ironic, I think, is it says you can only have two deliveries per day. And I know residents right now are having more than two deliveries a day.
Oh, yeah, I'm up to three or four.
Yeah,
I know so, Amazon hates coming to my house because they come, two or three times a day.
My guess is we ought to add home occupations up to July, after July, as a just a re-review to see what shakes out after pandemic, because I think that's going to be a dynamic group.
I wouldn't have any problems. I'll mind a personal deliveries. There's no occupation
involved. Right, right, right. But yeah, I just think it's one that we have to be ready and prepared to monitor and watch.
So I know this is a little bit out in left field, but what about helicopter pads? Is that something that would be considered an accessory use?
Are you parking a helicopter there, or are you just having a pad somewhere like in an office medical profession, or are you talking residential?
Either one. I just, you know, foresee that being something that could be surfacing anywhere, really. So residential, I guess, would be the first question to that.
Even if it is being parked in the backyard,
HOA type thing, like for the neighborhood, there's in the mountains for sure. There's helipads in the neighborhoods so that you can helicopter to there and then you go to your house in the neighborhood.
It would be considered an accessory use, especially for residential, because residential is your primary structure is going to be your house. So at that point it would fall under accessory use. And if it's just a helipad, it's going to be mostly, concrete. And as long as it's within the.
Julie, let me put you a stop on that one.
Okay.
Helipads are, not accessory uses to the residential because it's not a building or it's accessory. It would require special consideration, and I don't know the answer to the question, how the draft LDO applies to that. But helipads and airports are normally industrial classifications. They are not permitted in residential or commercial districts.
Okay.
So do we have something that communicates that? Because you say usually, so I don't know if that means that.
Let us look into that one. It's a good question. Okay. You raised a good thought there. We need to look at that one.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, because there is one in Wakefield. There is I'll call it a mansion over there that has a helipad and a helicopter. Go ahead. We'll look into it.
Yep.
Are you friends with that person, Jackie?
I wish.
As long as I get personal knowledge, but anyway.
All right. So if there, that was a good addition because I didn't even think about a helipad. Is there anything else that we might need to consider? And again, you're not on the spot. You can always contact me. You can always email me.
I want to flesh through all the various recreational uses, like, the new trendy thing also is, and this is some down the line, but a multi-use recreation facility for like pickleball. One big new booming franchise across the country is pickleball with beer and chicken. It's a multi. I don't know how you deal with that. Maybe it's a retailer or maybe it's commercial use, but I want to make sure those kind of multiple use facilities.
And like I know Top Golf is big and your axe throwing too. So those kind of uses. Yeah. All right.
The question with that would be, which one is the primary activity? Is it the retail service or is it the recreation?
Yeah. Okay.
You're going to have combinations like that, like you described, and you're going to have to choose one or the other to be the primary. Hmm. Is that what happened? The other ones are going to be accessory uses to the primary.
I see. Okay. Thanks.
All right. So again, if we're missing something, just let me know. Temporary uses. So this is where we talked a little bit about the definition for temporary. What is temporary? It's a limited time frame of 3 months. It includes seasonal sales. It includes food trucks. This section is about 2.5 pages, maybe 3 pages long. Most of it focuses on the food trucks and the use standards for food trucks, the temporary sales lots and the temporary use permit. Just talks about, you need to make sure that you've got your permission from the property owners and that you know the standards for that, such as on-site parking and signs and lighting, that kind of thing. So that is where we cover the temporary uses a little bit. And then the last thing, of course, is the permitted uses table. We've seen that a little bit as we've gone through this talk today on what is permitted by right, what is special use. If it's blank, it means it's not allowed in that district. And of course, as we update these use categories, we'll be updating the table as well. So if we add something to the definitions, we'll be adding something to the table if we take something away. And then we'll be looking at the zoning districts. So we haven't really discussed the zoning districts yet. That's in our next meeting materials. And so as again, just wanted to point out that this is a living document right now. It's going to be changing and growing as we change and grow, so that what you see right now in 4 months might not be what you see as a final draft going before the board. But if, and I'm stumbling over all my words here because I'm trying to do three things at once. I'm sorry. But as you go through the tables, if you see a particular use in a area where you don't think it should be, let us know. We've already tagged the industrial as that in the industrial business park. We've tagged the adult businesses. And so if you see anything else here, again, always feel free to contact me. You can contact Danny or Kelly or Michael as well, just to make sure that we've got these in areas that you feel comfortable with. And if you think something is permitted by right that needs to be under special consideration, that we can change it to special use. So just let me know if you have any additional feedback. Again, the chart is grouped by zoning district. It's color coded and it is grouped by the type of use for the principal uses, and then it is in alphabetical order. So the chart is hopefully a little bit easier to read than what we currently have in our UDO, keeping with the new format and the new stylized printing of it to make sure that it's a little bit more easily understandable at first glance. So if you have any other comments about the style or the readability of anything, always give me a comment for that as well.
Julie, I think this is a good time to talk about scheduling the meeting because it's already 1:30 and some people will be cutting out soon.
Yes. So I had in my email asked if everybody was available for February 4th. We are trying to get through a lot of information in the next couple of months. And as we've already, we had six chapters to do today. We only got through two. And I figured that would be about what we could get through in the time slated. So I'd like to go over the next three chapters on February 4th, if everybody's available from noon to two, to do another meeting to discuss those before we move on to sections. So the next sections would be three for the zoning district, six, and a little bit of eight and nine we'll briefly touch on, which is the TIA and the subdivision regulations. And then on the 18th, we'll discuss some of the definitions, some of the overlays, and the basic introduction to what, you know, to the first couple of pages that you'll see introducing the LDO. So those are what's coming up. We have a lot to get through, so I'd like to add that extra meeting if possible.
Julie, I'm available on the 18th, but I will not be available on the 4th.
The 4th, okay. I have also a conflict every week. This is why I'm constantly running behind from meeting to meeting. So I can make it, but I'll be late.
Okay, so you had already put the 4th out there a while ago, correct, Julie?
Yes.
Okay, so I know this time is of the essence for us, and as long as we can get a majority of the board to be a part of this conversation, I really think we should stick with the 4th. And for those who can't miss it or will be late, there's still the recording in which they can hear okay. And ask questions.
I agree with Michelle. And unfortunately, I've got to leave this meeting. I will look forward to your decision on either keeping it on the 4th or moving it to another date.
Jackie, I'll email you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, I got about 12 minutes left myself, but I'm good with the 4th and the 18th.
Okay.
Anybody all right, so else? To answer the question, we'll keep the schedule of the 4th as noon, And obviously those that will not be able to attend, there's an opportunity to, to just already see the video or inquire with us, and we'll see what we can do to assist, particularly if there's questions they want to get answers to.
Right. Cool. And you'll have you'll have the agenda, so you can look over the materials as well. So you can always make comments on your own if you need to.
And obviously, if we start gathering and we do have a very low quantity of people present, we might have to reschedule. But as long as we have a majority of the stakeholders, the steering committee, I'm okay with having a follow up do that.
All right. So we'll plan on February 4th and then go ahead and put the 18th on your calendars. That should be on your calendar already. Make sure that you have both of those dates slated. Your agenda should come out sometime next week. Let me look at that. So I believe about the 28th or 29th, you'll be receiving the materials. If you want to go ahead and look at what's online just to get a brief overview of what's coming, the working draft is posted online. We may have an updated version for you provided by the consultants based on staff's comments from our first read through of that draft. So what comes in your packet might look a little bit different, but it will at least get you started if you want to jump on that. And so we'll be doing chapters 3, 6, 8, and 9.
Okay.
Sounds and good. Again, I will put slides out like I did today. I don't if that was helpful for you as you're reviewing the material to kind of call out what it is that we're trying to focus on and guide that conversation. So if that was helpful, let me know and I can continue doing that.
Yes, please.
Okay.
All righty then.
That is all I have, Kelly, if you'd like to wrap it up.
I think we're good.
Okay.
Julie, thank you. And we'll get out at the information very shortly, right, Julie?
Yes.
Great. So we'll capture it and make sure we get it on our calendar.
Yes. Great.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, team.
All right.
Bye-bye now. Thank you. Everybody,
thank you very much.
Good day.
Thanks. Bye-bye. See you.